Can I ask a question since I have the microphone, even though I'm supposed to facilitate them?
Oh, there we go.
I wasn't going to, but I really do have a question. So it's in relation to the survivors, the unsaved gentle survivors. So it talks about in Zechariah 9:7 about how, you know, the Ekronite will become, you know, the remaining remnant will become like leaders. And Ekron, the Ekronite, like a Jebusite, is that what it says?
Ekron. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So I'm connecting that with Isaiah 17, which is a parallel passage on the judgment against Damascus, where it also talks about how those who remain or those who survive will become like the glory of the children of Israel.
Say it slower. This is big.
Okay. Isaiah 17, I think it's verse 5.
See, that's a problem I have with some of you guys. You talk so fast.
No. You talk fast. You're like... Ksh.
That was the point.
Anyway.
Go ahead.
Okay. So it's basically saying the same thing. It's just talking about the remnant in Syria mm-hmm. being as the glory of the children of Israel. And in 9:7 here, it's talking about,
it's
you know, the coastal cities of Philistia
six.
becoming leaders. So my question... in this, and what's new to me is this, does this present a different narrative of the unsaved Gentiles? Because we've always talked about them as, you know, Uncle Joe and backwoods Montana, but here we're having examples of individuals in the epicenter of the Antichrist tyranny in Israel and in Syria who have not taken the mark of the beast because they go on to become saved.
Yes.
How are they
preserved?
Preserved.
I'm not sure if this is the answer, but one thing that I've been thinking a lot about lately is about the presence of the church in the Middle East. I think that that's the thing that is easy to forget, is that there will be a strong prophetic witness in the land. And I think that is what's going to contribute to some of the preservation, is the preaching of the gospel, their response to it in terms of recognizing the deception but not fully saying yes to Jesus, which then results into their salvation when he comes back. So my premise is that there will be a strong, on fire, prophetic witness of the church in the land, of which I think the two witnesses are the biggest examples of that. But I don't think it's just two guys walking around. I think they're
144,000.
I think they're part of a prophetic community in the Middle East.
Okay. And it says that no one can buy or sell if they don't have the mark of the beast. It doesn't say that you can't barter and trade.
That's true.
Wow. I like that.
Interesting.
No, that's a great word.
Ready? Hi, Pastor. Could you explain to me the Ephraim dilemma? Now, what I understand is there's a separation with Ephraim
right.
in the Old Testament. And Psalm 78:9 says that in the day of battle, Ephraim was fully armed and they turned back. But I don't understand why Ephraim is like singled out more in the Old Testament. It's like a separation. I call it the Ephraim dilemma. Could you explain that to me?
Yes.
What's going on with Ephraim?
Yes, I could.
Thank you.
You want me to do it? You want me to do it? Okay. So here's the thing. Ephraim is the name that is used to speak of Israel,
right.
the 10 northern tribes.
Yeah.
Because even though he was the younger of the two sons of Joseph, mm-hmm. Jacob put his hand on him as the one who was going to lead the tribe of Joseph.
Right.
And Joseph got a double portion. So that's why you don't see a tribe of Joseph somewhere in the land. You see a tribe of Ephraim and a tribe of Manasseh.
Mm-hmm.
And so because Ephraim was appointed as the leader,
the firstborn,
mm-hmm. you know, he was actually the secondborn,
but he became the
positional firstborn.
Yeah. Right.
Because of that, that's why Israel is poetically referred to by the Lord as Ephraim.
Because they went back?
No, because it's like...
Well, I would say this. Ephraim means the whole 10 tribes.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean the one. It's like saying Washington, D.C. went to Vietnam.
Okay.
You know, it's like nobody, Washington, the U.S. Army went to Vietnam in the 60s.
Okay.
It's that kind of deal, yeah.
Okay, got it. Thank you.
All right, online question from Jacob. is the king of Gaza that will be killed in verse 5 the Antichrist? If so, was there also a historical figure who partially fulfilled this role as the king of Gaza in history?
I don't know. I haven't gone deep on that one.
I really doubt who'd be Antichrist. We don't see anywhere else that Antichrist is identified with Gaza.
But then there needs to be a historical fulfillment, or the king of Gaza future gets killed in the Antichrist invasion.
I mean that
makes sense.
That would be like saying whoever is the head of like Hamas or PLO, whoever
yes, gets
is
killed
ruling
by the Antichrist.
Gaza at that time.
One thing that could possibly play into this is when you look at Zephaniah 2, there's a similar message in Zephaniah 2 as we see there in Zechariah 9 of the destruction of the West Coast. So it could be related to the Antichrist and army invading.
But the head of Hamas,
PLO, I don't know who's
the PLO, however
I think the PLO,
it goes,
which I don't know which one is ruling Gaza Strip right now.
The Palestinian Authority, at least.
Yes, yeah. Right.
So at the head of that could be that, but I'm not bold enough to say it.
We don't.
I mean,
we don't know.
They're just using the word king in terms of a leader.
Joshua, tell us who's this guy is a Islamic Muslim authority for real, for 30 years. Who is the king of Gaza?
Who's leading Gaza these days right now? Abbas. President.
So is there a president of Gaza, or what would he be called?
I don't know how that's all.
Is it Palestinian Authority?
Yeah, the Palestinian Authority. In the news, they call him a president.
Thank you. And hey, for your servanthood, here's a pen.
God's been good to me. Oh, God's always been good. Thank you. I appreciate this, guys, for real. The dreams have been flowing.
For those of you that were not here last week, he was all excited because somebody gave him a pen and about 20 people gave him pens. So if you were not here last week, you can't understand the joy that exploded out of him just now.
Jesus loves me. I love you too, man. My question is also concerning chapter 9, verse 7. And just as an aside, you said, well, he won't take them for Levites.
Or for priests, yeah.
So,
I mean, I'm assuming he won't. Brian would know that more. He's not going to take these guys as priests. You know, the Isaiah 66 stuff, is he? I don't think they're a priest, yeah.
I did just, because I was pretty stoked about a verse in Isaiah 66 right. And the verse that's on the wall in the prayer.
Yeah, the priest thing, yeah.
Yeah, because he says, I will also take some of them for priests and Levites, says the Lord. And if you read it in the context.
It looks like the Gentiles.
Yeah. They sure do.
And that's why I was mentioning, he knows that passage well. That's why I was saying maybe it's these guys, but I don't have the boldness to say it.
There's hope for me.
But there isn't anything here that says anything about them being priests or Levites. It says they're going to belong to God. They're going to be a clan in Judah.
But they'll be leaders is the reason you think they might be.
Yeah, but they're going to be like the Jebusites, which just means that they hung out there still.
Yeah.
It didn't mean that there were no Jebusites.
But it
priests.
Does say leaders in Judah. And so you don't know if that means political, economic. You don't really know. We'd be presuming to make it spiritual.
Well, some translations say leaders. Other translations say clan. There'll be a clan in Judah. In other words, there'll be their own family unit.
Their little fraternity.
Yeah.
Another online question from Sarah. I'm wondering if we will ever fast when we are in the millennial kingdom according to Zechariah 7:5.
Resurrected bodies, no. People with non-resurrected bodies, I don't even think we need to speculate, you know. Because that means the Sermon on the Mount, you don't do it all in the millennium. But the Lord is there, but he's in Jerusalem. But
I think we could have one speculation.
One guy lives in Texas, yeah.
We could have one speculation based on Matthew 9. Because the bridegroom is with them.
But he's in Jerusalem. He's not in Texas. And that guy in Texas.
Yeah, but he's basically with us.
Yeah.
He's not there. He's here.
Yeah, I'm thinking of bridegroom with it meant they walked together, the 12 of them and a few other folks.
No. Because he also says that the bridegroom will be taken Texas, away.
The Texans are moving to Jerusalem.
No. No, I think that guy in Texas is going to have to fast.
But him being in Jerusalem isn't him being taken away.
What's that?
Him being in Jerusalem and there being a distance between them isn't the same thing as him being taken away.
Back into heaven, right?
And when he's taken away, then they will mourn, then they will fast.
But I would say that people in the millennium that are like not resurrected people, but that are still the human
natural
people,
body.
I just know that I won't
people,
be.
They're going to, I think they're still going to fast according to Isaiah 58 and what God describes here, where he says, administer true justice, show mercy and compassion. I think that's part of how Jesus is going to rule them, is that people are going to be required to live that way.
Are you saying something, ma'am? Yom Kippur. Oh, fast day.
Matthew 9. But hey, you know, but I won't be fasting because I'll be having that resurrected body. So I'm good.
Texas.
You know what? Like
that's
what
a really
about
good
in
point.
The where it says the different ones that they're gonna do in the millennium? Are any of them Yom Kippur? None of them are Yom Kippur.
Let's get on to the next guy who's gonna like ask us something way harder than this. Let's just get it over with. Go ahead. Just get it over with.
So my question is about the second coming procession. It's in the 43rd month, right?
Right.
Okay, so it's 30 days.
Right.
Jesus is freeing the prisoner. So I know he comes from Edom. That's the south. Right. That's where his whirlwinds go, right?
Right. Coming from the south. And that's something that every one of them, he's coming up in that direction.
So the Valley of Megiddo, you know, the whole wine press is 200 miles. Right. So my question is, I have a couple questions about it. One is, Palestinians are the Philistines. Is that connection?
Yes,
ancient.
Yes.
So are Edomites Philistines? Is that?
I don't know. Again, Joshua would have to tell us. No, you're not telling us, or no, they're not. The guy's got like 5,000 pages of research. He knows this stuff.
Okay, so are Edomites Arabs?
30 years he's been teaching this stuff.
Not on that subject.
Oh.
So, well.
Honestly, you're asking a DNA question?
It goes into my question about, is he on the ground liberating captives all through that 200-mile region?
Oh, I don't know about that.
So is he?
I don't know. I can't.
Is
tell.
He going to the ends of the earth? Are there Jews in prison camps all across the earth?
I don't know how that works.
Is he just in the Middle East? Do we?
Can you
just
think of a
know?
Bible verse that answers your question?
I'm asking you guys.
Well, I can't think of a Bible verse that answers your question.
I don't know. I just I assume he's on the ground
that answers the
in
question,
the Middle East.
We can't answer it.
I'm going to go back to millennial fasting.
I'm just saying, if the prisoner thing is so prominent in the end times, is he going all over the earth? Like,
I don't know.
Does America have prisons in it?
I can't tell.
We don't know.
I'm assuming there are prison facilities many places. So does he go to every one of them? No. Angels go? I don't know. I'd only be speculating. I know he goes to some.
But are prison camps all over the earth or just in the Middle East for Jews? Is that the idea is that all over the earth there's prison camps for Jews? We don't know.
I think not all over in the sense of like every single 100 miles there's one.
Test,
I don't think it's
test.
That way, but I think they will be here and there. Yeah.
I think one thing that we have to keep in mind is Isaiah 61. He didn't just say, I'm going to go open up prison doors. He says, the Spirit of the Lord is upon me to open up prison doors, which right there makes the whole thing supernatural. And so I don't think that necessitates him going to every single prison door
so
and opening it
I
up.
I agree with that, yeah.
And then secondly, what is interesting is that Luke is the one who takes Isaiah 61 as his his thesis. And so you see Jesus healing the sick and delivering demons and so forth. But then in the book of Acts, Luke, I think, adds the opening up of prison doors dimension to it. where you see at least...
Because Peter twice had doors
twice
open.
Twice, and then Paul, you see at least three locations of prison doors opening up.
By angels.
By angels and supernatural power. And I think that kind of shows us a little bit of how this could operate when the Lord returns.
Yeah, I think that's the right end. I mean, that would be the Book of Acts answer, that by the Spirit, the doors open, but he's personally probably there on the pathway to Jerusalem.
Right.
Do you think, Stuart, that there will be Jewish prisons to the ends of the earth, or do you feel like it will be mainly...
I don't see why not.
But again, yeah, here but and there, right. Not
right,
comprehensive.
Not every, exactly, yes.
Yeah, not comprehensive, right. Yeah.
Now that I'm up here, I really like Stuart's answer, but I was going to just highlight Isaiah 27:13, which is about the trumpet being sounded, but it highlights those about to perish in Assyria. So it looks like that is one of the regions in Isaiah. He highlights Assyria a lot as far as the location where Jews are coming from, and he just those that are about to perish.
So they are in Assyria, yeah.
So to tag on to Chris's question...
Wait, you're the moderator.
I'm so sorry. Reuben gave me the microphone.
Blame Reuben. He's not here.
You said that the first part of Zechariah 9 was a partial fulfillment performed by Alexander the Great.
Yes.
And the progression of that is from north to south. So how do we navigate that when, as Chris just mentioned, the Lord comes in the whirlwinds from the south? How is there destruction of Syria, Damascus, on down through the coastal cities?
See, I think that's the Antichrist coming from the north to the south, and Jesus is coming from the south to the north.
So the destruction that occurs to those initial cities and regions comes at the hands of the Antichrist,
Yes, in my opinion, it does.
Okay.
It never says it, but I think that's true. Okay. Because he's against Syria, he's against Turkey, I mean, against Egypt. I mean, he's fighting these from Daniel chapter 11. You know, he's the kings of the north, the kings of the south.
Oh, so you're putting Daniel 11 in there. Okay, I have one final online question from Jacob. What is the meaning of men thriving on grain and women flourishing on new wine in verse 17? Why do you think Zechariah seems to be highlighting a difference in the way the blessing plays out based on gender in the millennium?
She asked me that at 3:00 today. And I said, Kathy, stop.
And then I gave him an answer that I thought. I said, well, maybe it has to do with that the grain is what you turn into the bread, and that's like the word of God, and then the new wine representing the spirit, and so it was just representing the word and the spirit.
I said, that means you got all the guys read the Bible, the girls fall in the spirit, and the girls go, wait, I love the Bible too, and the boys go, I like the spirit. I go, ah.
Will you take one more online one?
What I think, I don't know why the distinction, I can't tell that, but I think the meaning of it is that the land is good and beautiful, the people, the land, and the Lord, and the agriculture is blessed like Eden, and they're all prospering, and that's because the next verse, chapter 10, verse 1, the rains are coming, and the fruit and the vegetation is exploding, and most commentaries say chapter 10, verse 1 goes with verse 17.
It's probably just more of a picture.
But I wouldn't have the nerve to say the boys do the Bible and the girls do the spirit. And, man, I'd get hit by the boys and the girls.
Sorry.
Okay.
Will you take one more online one? Our online community has all the questions tonight, which is wonderful. Okay, last question from Sarah. I'm wondering if in Zechariah 9, 11 through 12, where it says, set free from the waterless pit, could also have something to do with the resurrection from the dead.
I think it just means waterless pit. Could it mean more? I suppose. But I really think it means prisons that you have a chance to get out of.
It's not in a context of resurrection from the dead.
Good. Thank you. Bless you all. See you next week. Well, hopefully a lot in the prayer room between now and next week.